Regular council meeting to order. Everybody would stand and do the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call. Everybody is here. Next part of the council meeting is for citizen input. If you have something that you'd like to address the council that is not on the agenda, that is city business, raise your hand and acknowledge you. And where's the podium's right there. We'll give you up to 5 minutes to come up and address the council. Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Dan?
Second.
Second? Gina? Okay, any discussion?
Mayor, do you have an amendment to the agenda?
Oh, sorry about that. You're right. We have an amendment to the agenda, so we have to back up a little bit. We're going to remove number 10, well 5 update. They did not get a chance to go down with the cameras. So to remove that, so I'll go back to Dan. Will you remake your motion with the amended agenda removing number 10, well 5?
So remake.
Gina? Second? Okay. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Okay, do I hear a motion on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second. Kaler? Who was second? Ken Johnson?
Yeah.
Okay. Ken first, Ken Johnson second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Public hearing on the 6-year street plan. Get that up here.
Tonight we're going to discuss the 6-year transportation improvement plan that runs from 2011 to 2016. The 6-year improvement street plan is required by the state, RCW. Each city is required to submit this annually. Why? It helps the state look at money in the future on what the needs are for the cities. So when we go through this, keep in mind that even though it's a report that goes into the state, there is no priority. Number one is not number one on the priority list. It could be the 10th one or the 9th one. We can get funded first. The list can be changed at any time. You have to be on this list to be eligible for funding. That's really the only requirement. So what we did is we took 4 projects off that were done last year, bumped everything up, and just basically kept the same. Doesn't really matter the priority or what's on the list, because at any time we can add something that we want to fund.
Excuse me. Let's open up the public hearing. I haven't got to that yet. Okay. Please bear with us as we prepare progress through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:04 and is being held to receive a staff report, receive public comments on the city's 6-year transportation improvements program for 2011 to 2016. This public hearing is required by law. The 6-year transportation improvement program for 2011 through 2016 has been developed, and the City Council has had opportunity to review the draft. We will now ask the staff to present their staff report. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, you've gotten half of it. What the plan is already. You know why we're doing it and what it means to submit this to the state. First of all, again, the projects are not in any kind of priority order. First project is Scutney Street West from Broadway Avenue westerly. This is to extend Scutney Street West to serve potential industrial parcels west of railroad tracks. This is 0.2 miles of improvement, the west side. Item 2 is West Concrete Drive realignment. That is crossing Highway 24 and concrete is offset, so we want to align them. That's what that project is about. Item number 3 is North Broadway Stormwater. been on our six-year street plan for a few years now since we did South Broadway, south of Main Street. So this is one we need to pick up. This is also one that working with the industries on Broadway will help us as long as we let them know a year in advance that we're going to be working on Broadway. They need a year in advance to budget in their cycle. Item number four is the turn lanes and approaches on SR 24. That's South 24, and as that Broadway is developed, there'll be a center turn lane to turn east and west off of Broadway. Number five is the pipe on East Lowell Canal, which is in conjunction with the East Columbia Basin Irrigation District from Lee Road to Cemetery. This is really the canal and the crossings at the different streets, and that's working with the Irrigation District, and that's 1.3 miles. Number six is the East Concrete Drive upgrade. This will provide frontage road on the south side of SR 26 to serve potential DOT overpass. The seventh item is the intersection SR 26 and 7th, which, and those of you that have been on the council for some time, know that currently DOT opposes that. It's too close to the intersection at 1st and the intersection at the at 14th, which is one that we approved last year. So, okay. Yeah, how do we make that work out? Right here. There you go. Thanks. So that's number seven. Number eight is the 7th Avenue and Columbia Street to construction, and that's 0.52 miles, and that's to construct the city portion of 7th Avenue from Scootney to Columbia Street, then Columbia from 7th to Tillman. And our last project on this plan is SR 24 industrial area improvements. Remember, we received a $550,000 grant for an engineering study for all the businesses south of Highway 26. This was to include water, storm drainage, sewer, and street improvements. Again, even though it's last on the list, doesn't mean it can't get funded first. And as you know, we have a three-year cycle that we have to fund it, or the percentage of interest on the loan goes up. I remember we talked about that last year. We've got 2 years behind construction monies on that project. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, I will now ask for public testimony. Questions or objections to be heard from citizens, please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone and state your name, address for the record. I'll allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Do we have any citizens that would like to talk about just the six-year transportation? Okay, since there are no public comments, I will close the time for public testimony. Okay. Does any of the council members have comments or questions at this time? Okay, I will close this public meeting at 7:09. Okay, resolution adopting the six-year street plan for 2011 to 2006. Eamon?
Before you have the resolution adopting the six-year street plan that we just revisited, and the council in adopting this, it will be sent to the state DOT for the RCW requirements.
Is there any council members that want to add or discussions? Okay, so do I hear a motion to adopt the six-year transportation improvements resolution?
Make that motion.
Mark Snyder? Gina, a second? Okay, any more discussion? No? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, that passes then. Thank you. Okay. Public hearing on the request to vacate an alley. OK, Please bear with us as we progress through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:11 and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the request from Columbia Basin Health Association to vacate alleys. Okay, this public hearing is required by law. I will now ask the staff to present their staff report.
Thank you, Mayor. The let me orient you on this map first. Let's see, here's the CBHA building. Main Street would be up here, and First Avenue would be here. Currently, you go through the drive-in along First Avenue, and you enter here, go in a circle, and come around and go out. There are two alleys that we're talking about. There's an east-west alley, which is here. The city currently has a contract with CBHA. The contract is for use of that alley by CBHA. The other alley is a more south alley that extends here from Hemlock to the alley that the CBHA currently controls. What they're asking for is to void the contract and we move ahead and vacate this alley and this alley. What that means is control of the alley goes to CBHA. They are then responsible for all maintenance and upkeeping, snow plowing, and everything associated with alley maintenance. This, in fact, would then become CBHA property. So, are there any questions on the proposal?
Hold a second. You're done then, Eamon? Okay. I will now ask for public testimony, questions, or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone and state your name and address for the record. I'll allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. So is there any citizens that would like to come up and address the CBHA alley abatement that we're going to do, possibly? Okay. Okay, since there's no public comments, I will close the time for public testimony. Do any of the council members have comments or questions at this time?
They're going to come in off Main Street still?
First Street. They can come off Main Street here. Main Street would be to the north here. But they would have to come down to Hemlock and go around, or they could come in here. The three main differences in the current traffic pattern are number one, there's no backup on First Avenue anymore. It's brought internal into the property of CBHA. The second one in the lower right-hand corner, the southeast corner, is currently there's about a 3 foot distance between the edge of the curb and the approach. This will be moved over about 20 feet, which the chief has recommended for safety reasons. It might be 30, I have to check. It's either 20 or 30 feet. And then the overall parking configuration has changed, and CBHA is proposing to improve the whole lot. So they could come off the main here.
So you're going to have to come on the furthest one to the east, then you come up and then you have to go around that block and then out?
Yes.
So where you used to go into the drive-through there, that's going to be just a curb now?
Yes, that would be a curb if you're blocked off. There's no more access here.
Okay, then what about down here at the middle?
Down here and go to the pharmacy. On the south end.
The arrow down the existing alley will be blocked off, and then what will happen there?
Here?
Yeah.
And they come around. I remember right. I can't remember. That was a change that we made from the original.
Greg's here.
Yeah.
Even there's three different places. So you enter here for the pharmacy.
Right.
You enter here to park here. You enter here to go there.
Here
is just exit only, and that's one of those.
How do you get out of there?
Breakaway barricade, that's right.
Okay. How do you get out of there then?
You pull up to it, and it opens up.
Ah.
Okay. Like Tri-City Airport, you guys have been there? Just pull up to it and it opens. Just to don't let traffic go in that way.
I don't see the second drive-through window, so I don't have to wait. Oh, never mind.
You pay the first one, don't you go to the second.
That didn't work either.
Any more questions from council?
There's no utilities, city easements, or...
We'll still have an easement for here. Okay. Yes. And then an issue that council member Deaver brought up some time ago was a yellow curve that's painted from here back to about here for the sight distance when you're coming out of the alley.
That made a big difference. And if you painted on the other side of that outlet, it would help too. Because every once in a while you pull up there and they park right there at the end of the alley where it comes out, going towards what? Yeah, going down.
South?
Right there, where you come out.
Here?
Yeah. At that end, that alley exit, I don't think it's painted, but it may be.
This has been reviewed by the planning department, by the police department, and it has been recommended for approval.
Any more questions by council? Okay, then I will now close this public hearing at 7:17. Okay, we'll move on to number six. Ordinance to vacate alley. Eamon?
You have before you an ordinance that will basically change the existing contract and vacate the alleys, both the north-south and east-west alley. We'll vacate that property to CBHA so that they're in control.
Okay, any questions for Eamon? Do I hear a motion to award the 2010 street? Oh, wait a minute, I got the wrong one here. That's not it. Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the ordinance providing for the vacation of the alleys located in block 18 on the southeast corner of Main Street and First Street, and as further described within the ordinance?
Make that motion.
Mark Snyder?
Second.
Second by Ken Johnson. Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, the motion passes. Okay, 2010 Street and Infrastructure Improvements Project Bid Tabulation and Award. Larry Julius. Or Taylor, okay.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. On June 8th, last Tuesday, we opened bids for the 2010 Street and Infrastructure Improvements here in town. We had 14 bidders, the low bidder being $4,413,080.99, and the high bidder being $5,837,242.02. The engineer's estimate on this job was $5,998,465. The low bidder was MRM Construction out of Ellensburg, Washington. Is currently a Washington State registered and licensed contractor and appears to have the relevant qualifications to do the work. We have worked with them personally on several projects in the last few years, and all the projects were successful. As the council is aware, there were five optional to owner schedules. Schedule B was the Main Street traffic signals, which provided traffic signals on Broadway, First Avenue, Fourth Avenue, Seventh Avenue, 11th Avenue, and 14th Avenue. The low bidder for Schedule B was $448,307.50. The engineer's estimate on Schedule B was $650,000. In addition to Schedule B, there was Schedule C, the Main Street beautification improvements. The low bidder was $40,831.71. The engineer's estimate on Schedule C was $51,875. The next three schedules, D, E, and F, were the alley entrances, which provided a 20 by 20 reinforced concrete entrance on various alleys throughout the city. On Schedule D, the low bidder was $29,776. Schedule E was $33,498, and Schedule F was $26,054. The engineer's estimate for Schedule D was $40,000, for Schedule E was $45,000, and Schedule F was $35,000. With that, I guess...
The optional with owner items are ones that council will need to discuss as far as whether to award or not. As Taylor said, we have worked with MRM. They come highly recommended. They do very good work. We are recently working with them in other communities, stretching everywhere from water reservoirs to pipeline jobs to street jobs. So they do have the ability, the personnel, and the equipment to do the work. And we do recommend award of the base bid, and should council so desire, the optional with owner schedules also. All the bids from MRM did come in under the estimate, and Mike has prepared a spreadsheet to show how that fits in with the financing, where we came from back in January with costs to council compared to where we are now with the actual bid amounts. And if you have any questions regards the bid tabulation itself, would be happy to walk through any of the numbers.
Questions?
I had one on the Main Street traffic signals, Schedule B. I thought I heard him say the low bid on that was like 400 and some thousand.
Yes.
But the bid that we'd be accepting, they're charging, I show, $763,000 for that.
That number includes the engineering design, the construction administration, and the inspection as well. The base numbers, the $448,000 was MRM's bid, and from there, to make it an apples-to-apples comparison to what we discussed with the council back in January, we had the soft costs added in.
Okay.
Any other questions for Larry? Okay, Larry, I guess we might come up.
One of the difficult things in this is to compare all of this to what we talked about at council a number of weeks ago when council gave us permission to go ahead with the bond issue. And so what I'm going to try to do is tie all that together, and hopefully that's what I'll do.
Or confuses.
Control L.
There you go.
Anyway, I'll just go with what I got, and I can scroll up. What I did is these first two columns are the original budget amount. This was the $3.840 million for the Main Street and Storm. This is our original number, and this is where the funding. There was a councilmatic bond issue for, I think the actual bond would be about $3.2 million because of cost in issuing the bond. There was street fund reserves and utility taxes, and that's what makes up this $3.4 million. Okay, then as you scroll down, here's that total here. And then I've
broke out the these are two enterprise funds, our utility funds, and the money cannot be commingled. So by saving money, for instance, in the water project, we could move it up into the other part of the project because those are utility fund monies, and they just cannot be mixed. So here's the water issue here. It originally, the engineering estimate was $1,392,000, and this is how it would be funded. Water fund reserves of $900,000, and we're going to do an interfund loan from the sewer reserves for $492,000. Well, the estimate came in at $859,135, for a savings of $532,865. So what I did is I did away with the sewer fund interfund loan right here, and then we saved another $40,865 on this water fund using money from the water fund reserves. So basically we get down to the $859,135. And then on the and this is fund 406 on the alley entrances, and we started out and this is actually in the solid waste funds utility right now is budgeted is $40,000. That was in our budget. Well, when they looked at this project, they figured it was a good time to do all of that, or more of the alley entrances, because we felt like we'd get a good cost on it, and we really did. As you know, the engineering estimates were at like $120,000 for all three of them, all three of the phases, and it came in at $89,328. So there was a huge savings. And so this fund needed another $49,328. And as council knows, I know we go through this every budget process, this fund has a reserve of over $200,000 and actually no place to use it because there's no capital. We contract out our services for garbage, so we don't really spend money on capital except maybe for these alley entrances and stuff. So the idea is to transfer the additional $49,328 from the solid waste reserve fund, which would take it down to about $160,000 or somewhere right around here. Okay. We'll back up again. Okay. So here, this 2010 city budget is actually money that has been, but is currently budgeted in our 2010 budget. $220,000 for Olympia Street, $75,000 for Alliance Park sidewalk walking path, and $70,000 for a parking lot extension. I believe it's up by a swimming pool, if I'm not mistaken. All of this is currently in our 2010 budget. So we add this to the project, the $365 to the project, because that money is available. So that's what that is. And then here's the projects that we're proposing to add. And this was the original estimates. The traffic signals were estimated at $1,224,000. The beautification, $58,000. And then we have Olympia again, the Lions Park sidewalk, and the parking lot extension. And then here's how the bid came back. The streetlights came back, and once again, this is with engineering included, $763,170. We saved nearly $500,000. Beautification came back at $40,800, saved $17,000 on that. The Olympia Street came back at $130,000, almost $500,000, so it saved $89,433. And the walking path came in a little higher than our estimate, so we'll spend an additional $14,000. And then the parking lot extension came in at 48, so we saved $21,000. So by adding this 365 in budgeted money to what we have in these available funds right here, we end up at $4,205,000. And then we put in all of these other projects with our original project amount, it comes to $4,156,690. So it's a difference of, I think, approximately $48,000. So anyway, I felt like that. anyway, I was pretty happy to see that. There's really not much more down below to talk about. I think the big issue is right here in this part of the project. And as you with this funding here and adding the money from the budget, it's already in 2010, we have enough money to fund the project. That means we'll end up with a council mandate bond issue that that should council. I think Jack was here, presented that to be, I think it's just a little over $3.2 million with their costs included. We originally didn't expect to get the traffic signals in there and beautification. And so this is a real plus. So that's the plan.
That's pretty exciting to see us save at least $1.5 million, where we thought it was going to cost. I guess before you start, Ken, would the council like to go line item by line item on the main street, make a decision? Is that how you'd like to do it, or I just want to? How would you like to do this?
Just go by the line
item. Line item by line item, or you want to vote the whole thing? That's up to you guys.
By line.
By line. That's what I'm seeing, man.
There's only three.
Ken, did you want to say something?
I want to say something prior to that. What I'm looking at here, basically, if we take Olympic Street out of there, and you take what we figured as far as the budget or the estimate, whichever way you want to look at that, we're actually getting all that other for that same amount of money, actually a little bit less. So basically, the whole project we're going to do without Olympic Street, what we estimated Main Street would be. So that's the way I look at this thing, that we're getting all of that included in that same price. So it's looks like a good thing to do the whole project, the way I look at it.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll start the discussion on Main Street traffic signals. Does anybody have comments?
I think it's a good opportunity to do it. Yeah. You really don't realize there's a problem until you drive down the street and nothing lines up. And you go to each light pole and there are different lights that we're using. And nothing's in sync. And I don't think we're going to get this any cheaper down the road.
Any other people with discussion? Okay. All right. Then how do we do this? Just move to the next one?
You can either vote on each item. Discuss each item, wait till the end, wait for a motion. It's up to the council how they want to deal with it.
How do you want to do it? Want to vote on each item as we go?
I'd rather wait till the end.
Wait till the end?
Yep.
Okay. Main Street beautification. Is there any citizens that would like to talk about the Main Street traffic signals before we move forward? Give a couple people an opportunity if they'd like to. Okay, then we'll go to Main Street beautification improvement. Discussion? I'm definitely for this, so you know that. I'm excited to see us do something like that because, you know, I see this as for our citizens, you know, to make our community look a lot nicer, especially when you're pulling in and things like that. So, you know, I'm really excited myself to see that in there. And so any other comments?
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to provide that infrastructure that they need to be able to get the grants to go ahead to make the Main Street improvements. Mm-hmm. As far as the beautification is concerned.
Any other comments? Okay. Is there any citizens that would like to address Main Street and beautification?
Mr. Mayor, and City Council, I would just like to say on behalf of our beautification committee and some of the concerned citizens that are here that the possibility of
excuse me, one second. I hate to interrupt. Could you come to the mic and state your name? Yeah, we have to have it for the record.
All right. The possibility of making...
We need your name first.
My name is
we
Lynette.
We know who you are, but the mic needs to be
all right. I'm Lynette Carruthers, and I'm representing our beautification committee for Othello. And I would just like to say that we have folks here from beautification and concerned citizens
that are here to, because we support the idea of making our Main Street as welcoming and as beautiful as we can possibly make it. And that's what this beautification project will allow. The stub outs of the power and water, the full length of Main Street, will bring such possibility to our Main Street that we just highly, highly recommend that this decision go forward.
Thank you. I do appreciate all the work the beautification committee's done. I've been in some of your meetings, and they've worked hard, and I'm excited on this one. So, okay. Well, the next three were already in the budget, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, so I guess we don't have to discuss that. Okay, then I guess.
I have a couple of comments.
Okay, Mark.
To our engineering firm, the Lions Park lot extension, there's quite a discrepancy there. Are they, do you recall in the specs that includes the curbing and everything?
Yes, it does.
Okay. While you're up at the podium, does the $1.5 million discrepancy, how do you feel on that?
I think it's a very competitive bid. There were about half the bids that were in the $4 to $5 million range. The other half were between $5 and $6 million. Our estimate was on the high side. We don't like being the high bidder, but we don't like being the low bidder either. When we put an estimate together and compare it to the bids, we look at each line item of the various bidders, and if our estimated number is somewhere between the high and the low range of all those bids, then we think that's a comfortable number. And pretty much all of the line items were somewhere in between high and low. There were a couple of them where we were on the low end, a couple we were on the high end. But for the majority, we are right in between all the different bids. So we're comfortable with the number. I think MRM sharpened their pencil. We've noticed this, especially in the bidding climate we're in right now. The contractors that sharpen their pencils, that aggressively go after the work, are the ones that are keeping in business and being the low bidders. One other thing I'd like to point out, the walking path sidewalk around Lions Park was, the low bid was higher than what we had estimated. And I think because when that was originally budgeted, it was just a sidewalk project. We now have an asphalt walking path that meanders through the north half of Lions Park. That cost in itself, I think, bumped things up a bit.
See, no, I'm not familiar with that. I don't know if the rest of the council is, but that's news to me.
Hmm. Asphalt, you said?
Yeah.
So the sidewalk runs up Hamlet to where the houses start?
To about where the parking lot is.
Yes. The sidewalk, the concrete sidewalk, runs from 7th Avenue along Hamlet, and then just before the parking lot starts, there's a row of trees. Before those trees, we angle the sidewalk up to connect to the parking lot right in front of the hockey rink, and then it goes along the front of the parking lot, similar to the other side of the park, where there's the sidewalk in front of the parking lot. And then right after the parking lot, it turns into an asphalt path that angles over to the fence of the water reservoir. It runs along the fence until the fence 90s and heads towards First Street. Continues in asphalt until it gets to First Street, and then it goes back to concrete along First Street and connects to 13. And what that does is it connects the city's sidewalk system. So basically, there's sidewalk there by the hospital on 13, and this sidewalk and walking path will connect that all the way to 7. So you'll have a significant connection of the city's walking path.
So when it cuts across, is it on the west side of the water towers, the asphalt path?
No, it's on the north and east side.
Wow. So it goes right through the arboretum.
Well, except we're not taking out, we went over this extensively with the city. We're not taking out any of the arboretum trees.
Okay.
The path won't affect any of those. So.
Which is one of the pluses for going with asphalt rather than concrete, is we're able to meander it around obstructions a little easier. got a question on Olympia Street. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a sidewalk on that?
No. No, the thought was we would construct the road, the north half, and at such time as it's developed, if it ever does develop, the developer then would pay for the sidewalk, curb, and gutter.
So there's going to be no gutter on there?
Right. Just on the south side. Water will sheet off of the road into the existing borrow ditch.
So it'll be just like Olympia east of 7?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I have one for Mike, back to finance. You took off the loan from the sewer reserve fund, which is a loan that we pay back interest to ourselves. Is there any advantage to reducing the councilmatic bond by that amount and going forward with that interfund loan? Or are we committed to the councilmatic bond amount?
We're not committed until after tonight. We said that we would come back with a number tonight following council action.
So you can reduce that councilmatic bond by $492,000. And then we can go ahead with that interfund loan from the sewer and pay that interest back to ourselves.
The councilmatic bond is at 3.14725. Actually, with their costs, it comes a little over 3.2 million. So that would take it down to what, 2.8, say roughly.
Yeah, 2.85.
Is there any advantage to that, Eamon, or do you think it's worth doing, or should we just stay out of the sewer?
It's really a push, because when you do an interfund loan from one fund to the next with an enterprise fund, you have to pay existing interest rates, okay? And you're going to pay interest rates on the bond also. So the question really is, does the council want to pay itself back and its own fund, which is the advantage, or pay the bond with interest to people that buy the bond?
And if I may, the other thing, if you borrow from yourself, plan on not needing the money.
Oh,
because you're like any other creditor, you have to wait for your payment. You can't sort of guido us and strong arm the money early. You gotta wait for the terms of the agreement to pay out like the others would. I'm not saying that you would have a problem, but the council may want to keep that in the back of their mind, that if there should ever be a need for that money in the fund, if there some reason something happens catastrophically, you're stuck waiting like everyone else.
And I think it was one of the points I was going to bring up in response to your question. Our sewer permit has just been renewed for 6 years, and so our hope is to build reserves, because if we do really have to go ahead with a mechanical plant like the state has been telling us, then of course that money would be used. So paying that back in 6 years would be a little bit heavier burden than to leave it into the bond issue and pay it back over 20 years.
Well, you know, that was my initial objection to this whole project was the amount of that councilmatic bond, because by the time we take 25 years to pay that back, our payback's over $5 million.
Okay. Typically, cities do not borrow from themselves if they have another means of securing financing. Interfund loans are typically kind of last resort type things. For that very reason, you don't know if you're going to need the money.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I guess, Mike, I guess we're going to need a figure to put on here for the motion. It sounds like the council wants to do all, well, we're just adding two, I guess, to it. Is that what I'm hearing from the council?
They wore me down. I'm sure they'll vote for it. So I'm
quick, make a motion.
So I guess on the motion, it needs an amount.
Well, it should be motion. This right here, the current estimate, if we include everything.
That's what you want in there, Mike? Making sure.
Yeah, it should be. For the entire project, the bottom line would be 5.105082. That includes the enterprise funds, the infrastructure portions is 4.156619. So I'm not sure how we want to, how the motion would look, but.
The motion needs to award the bid to bidders. So if the councilmatic portion is not being awarded as part of the bids, it doesn't count.
We're doing the councilmatic bond on the 28th, so we can do the money then. But
okay.
Like Jim said, tonight is awarding the bids. The apparent low bidder, MRM of Ellensburg.
Okay. That is a motion on our sheet has an amount.
Right. And if you look at the memorandum prepared by Gray and Osborne, the motion would be to award the bid to MRM base bid for 4413080.99, and then to award the various schedules for the amount of the bid indicated in their memorandum, which I believe are five. Is that correct?
If I may, if the council is so inclined to award the base bid with all of the optional with owner schedules, perhaps the motion could be to award the project to the low bidder, MRM Construction, in the amount of $4,413,080.99, which includes schedules A through F.
Okay. Yeah, I guess.
I don't like that because that doesn't include the other projects, which they bid on.
No, he said A through F.
They were in the base bid.
Yeah.
There is A through F.
Yeah, but you're giving us $4.4 million and Mike's giving us $5.1 or $700,000 off.
Which was the engineering, design, inspection, the soft costs.
Which are not part of the bid.
Which are not part of the bid.
That's where we get the Gray and Osborne scholarship.
That's right.
Exactly. Soft cost.
Well, in comparison to 4.4 million.
Okay.
You got to pay Larry to come up here.
Soft cost.
Okay, do I hear a motion toward MRM? How'd you say that? The base bid plus
schedules
A through F for the amount of $4,413,080.99.
Yes.
That's what you want. Okay. All right. Do I hear a motion?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Gina? Okay. Charles has seconded. Any more discussion?
I thought that end of the table would be more thrifty.
Is that guaranteed no change orders?
We talked about that, Cam.
If it were possible, we would say absolutely. In today's bidding climate, we're finding contractors are more and more apt to put their hand out. And they're cutting their costs to barely get by. We'll do everything in our power to keep change orders to the minimum, if at all.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Do I hear any more discussion?
As a sidelight, I wanted to keep him honest. They said they recommended. So I called a friend of mine in Ellensburg who I've known for probably 57 years. He runs Knutson Lumber Mill Lumber Yard all those years. And I said, you know this outfit, this MRM? Oh, yeah. He said, I've known him for a long time. He said he used to be a rancher up at Wolddale. He got into construction, but he said they do good work. So.
Okay. Thank you for checking
keep
that.
Keep you honest.
Okay. You're on the payroll.
Okay.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed the same? Okay.
Thank
it passes
you.
Then.
Would you
Here's my notes. Okay, number eight, discussion of proposed gang-related ordinance. Council Member Johnson.
Okay, as you notice, this community has been kind of rocked by a little bit of gang violence lately. And I've had many citizens approach me asking what we could do as council members or citizens. And the first thing I told them to do is come to a council meeting. I'd like to hear their concerns, and I've heard quite a bit, and we've got quite a few people here tonight. And basically, I'd like to let these people speak tonight and hear from them. And then I have a ordinance tonight that I propose that me and my wife has worked on tonight, and she will present that a little bit later.
Is that okay with the council to hear from the citizens? Okay, then I think what we'll do is we'll allow each citizen 5 minutes when they come up and come to the microphone and state your name and address. Okay, and we'll allow, does a half hour sound good for council? Six people or so? Okay, we'll go like in half an hour then, and then Ken, you can go from there, and your wife from there, and give us whatever you have. So if you raise your hands, I'll acknowledge you, and you can come to the mic. Well, we're going to be speaking in a minute already, so. Is there other citizens that'd like to speak?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Maxine Taylor. I live outside the city limits, but I consider this my community. And I don't think the gang violence stops at the city limits. I'm very concerned that information about what we're trying to do to protect this community from this kind of violence doesn't seem to be getting out to all these people who are interested. And in fact, I spoke with Councilman Johnson, and he's told me about what he's doing. I have a grave concern that there are citizens in our area who somehow feel that the color of their skin is going to serve as armor to protect them from this violence. And I would suggest to you that if you read and watch the media, you find out that a lot of innocent people get caught up in gang shootings and violence. And so I'm asking you to please wipe the issue of race out of whatever comments are made, and let's do this for our community as a whole. Because if you think we aren't a Hispanic community, just look at the statistics. Let's not be blind to the fact that we are a community regardless of what color our skin is. Thank you.
Thank you, Max. Anybody else? Come on up.
My name is Bertie Fote, and I too live out in the county as well, 2128 West Viola. I've just heard bits and pieces about the possible ordinance, and some of the things that I wanted to bring up into light is I wanted to know if the council is working in partnership or collaboration with the schools, the juvenile department, the county, the Adams County Network. Any of those, are we just being reactive and not looking into partnership with these kinds of things, people that work with the juveniles one-on-one? I also want to say that I'm really disturbed by the vastly different statements that Chief Dunnigan gives as to the young man that was shot and his affiliation and the juvenile department. If we don't see eye to eye in our leadership, how can we bring leadership to this city and also leadership to our children? Those are the things that I would like to see focused on. Working with the juvenile department for many, many years, this still holds a great place in my heart, and these children do. Whether my kids are still in the school system or not, these young people mean a lot to me. And any child, regardless whether it's gang activity or any kind of violence, because we've lost other children to any other violence that wasn't deemed gang activity, we need to address. And we need to address it in a proactive way, not a reactive way. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertie. Anyone else? ahead, Eleanor.
Eleanor Brodahl, 600 North, 13th Avenue, Othello, Washington. While I sat on the council, I brought this issue up three different times. It is a serious issue. I've heard several different things the last couple weeks. I went to the viewing because a couple weeks ago, and I had heard that we had 30 gang members in town. All they had to do was go into the viewing and see the pews of all the gentlemen that were sitting there. We need to be proactive. These are our children, and we need to look at this. The other concern that I looked at it, because I've always been in the financial arena for many years, for way over 25 years, is I looked at what's this going to do to our community. If you're looking at economic development, and we've talked about economic development and whatnot, and if we're not a safe community, there ain't any business that's going to come here. So we need to seriously look at this, and we have been reactive, not proactive at all. And we need to look at that, and we talked before about what we had for our children to do in this community. So I would say this is a serious issue economically and the safety of our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor. Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
Good evening. Mike Beardsley, 849 South Meadowlark Lane. As you know, I'm the director for the Port of Othello, and I feel that this subject has direct economic impact on our community as it develops at large, and requires a proactive stance. Much like the intersection at Highway 26 and Reynolds Road that was creating a bit of an issue because it was marked as a place where a lot of accidents occur, I wouldn't want to see Othello become a place that gets ignored or avoided because we have those kind of issues. I still look forward to the day when we can be a sports capital, a playground where people will come and visit us and have their competitive events here with the beautification effort going on and everything else. There's no reason why Othello can't be quite the place. And I'm impressed with the maintenance of the city. I'm impressed with the law enforcement activity. Being an outsider coming here and seeing, you know, that there aren't more problems and more issues. And I think we need to be vigilant because it wouldn't take long for the gang members to outnumber the police officers and enforcement agencies. And by staying ahead of this issue, I think we can protect our citizens, create a better environment for everyone. And by being proactive, we can do the right thing by these kids that are having their problems too. Get on top of them, stay on top of their actions that are required, hold them accountable like everybody else should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Tim?
Yes.
I already have my 5 minutes. I said I already have my 5 minutes.
Oh, that's okay. Maxine, come on up.
I did not have 5 minutes. Oh, thank you. Anyway, there was one thing I wanted to ask, and I don't know if anyone has ever looked at this. How many of these young people that we're talking about being gang affiliated, et cetera, how many of them are our homegrown kids? And how many, what percentage of that figure are imports? Are people coming here because the larger cities are putting the screws to them? And they're moving out to these rural communities where they don't think they're have so much scrutiny.
It's a good question. I don't have an answer for you, so.
Just
at least not right now. So, any other people address the council? Okay, then we'll close the public side of it. Ken, you want to take over from here?
I'm going to let Heidi approach, and she's got a few words, and she's got something to pass out to the council members.
My My name's Heidi Johnson. I live at 1020 Cobblestone Avenue. First, I'd like to say thank you for letting us all come and talk tonight about a subject that is dear to a lot of our hearts and should be. I do have a proposed ordinance here that I'm going to hand out in a moment to City Council for criminal street gangs and gang-related activities. We've been looking at different towns around us to see what they have proposed and brought forward to be able to help stop some of gang activity, whether it be vandalism, theft, violence. It's all a problem. I've talked with a lot of different people recently, some ex-gang members, some people in our community, some moms of gang kids. And the general consensus is for the majority of gang kids, most of them get in at a very young age. Most of the kids I've talked to that are ex-gang members tried getting out at age 12. I've heard some people make comments such as, well, it's gang members shooting gang members, just let them do away with each other. We're talking about kids. I don't see how people can take that kind of a stand. And I'm not pointing fingers, but if we don't help to resolve the problem, we're part of it. That's how I feel. And it's like I made a comment earlier to someone today. If we're pointing a finger at someone else, there's three pointing back at us for what we aren't doing. I went to a church thing here recently, and I was so impressed. It had to do with the family from Julio Cervantes, some family members that came and spoke, talking about how they didn't want violence, for people to react, to pray for them. And one thing that really stood out to me that she said is, and I found myself saying the same type of thing in the past, so often we hear kids are our future. The reality is they're not our future, they're our now. They are today. We don't know who's gonna be here. Julio, like she said, didn't know he was gonna die at 17. And if we sit here and we label people, we find ourselves in a very strange situation because these are really just young kids trying to fit in, trying to find a place. We used to have a Boys and Girls Club. We used to have DARE programs. And in the past few years, without some of those programs, and I don't know if there's a lot more other things out there right now that I'm not aware of. We've seen an escalation in violence and crime with our young teens. And instead of pointing fingers and, you know, putting it on other people's backs, we all of us need to take a stand and come up with something to help stop it before it becomes a problem. Like they say, proactive instead of reactive. A couple of the shootings recently have been around areas where there have been young kids, birthday parties and stuff. One of your grandkids or kids could have been at one of those parties, and they could have been an innocent victim, or might be next time. And again, as I said before, we can't give up even on these kids that are in gangs. We need something to keep them off the street before they get to that level. We need them to know we care. You know, I talked to a young man recently that said he left Othello to get away from the gangs. He was 12 at that time. He's now an adult. and back here, and he said when he came back, the Boys and Girls Club was gone. And I'm not trying to use that to nitpick. I'm using it as an example of what it means to our community to have something for young kids. Right now, we have so many working parents, and so many times when we think of gang kids, we think, oh, their parents are people who don't care. That's false. There are a lot of people who care. I held on to a woman about 2 weeks ago. Sorry. Who is afraid for her son? And he's 16. And they're pretty sure he has been targeted. I sit there and I imagine, by a toss of a coin, being in her shoes. God put me where I am, and so far, thankfully, I haven't had to deal with that on my own home turf. But we are a community, whether in residence or outside of the city, whether living in Othello or Warden or Royal City or Moses Lake, all the communities around us, if we don't do something soon, it makes me very sad to think of what will happen. I've lived here since 1982. I've always been a very proud member of this community. And I came here initially thinking, from Warden, thinking, wow, this is an amazing place where they support their kids, they provide places, safe places for them. And I just lately have felt like, and it's, like I said, I'm not pointing fingers because I'm part of the problem too, because I haven't taken that step forward. None of us have, really, my opinion, to try to resolve some of this. But if you go out on the streets and you see who's in gangs and where they came from, the majority of the kids in Othello are Othello-based kids that I've seen and talked to. They were born and raised here. The surrounding areas, I don't know. But the ones I've talked to in Othello are from our town. I've got 4 kids I raised here, and I have 3 grandchildren that live here. I have 3 others that live in a community close to us that visit. And right now, to be honest with you, I don't feel safe letting my daughter out on the street. And that's not okay. And she's not in a gang. But as she has made comments to me, Mom, we live in a tiny little community. Who doesn't know gang members? We're all together. You walk down a street and you'd probably be surprised as to who some of them are. And she, like she said, she knows everybody from church activities to gang kids to everything. We have policemen putting their lives on the line, sheriff department, ambulance people, juvenile facilities that work with kids, whether they're going to rescues, whether they're going to try to take someone into custody to bring forth whatever justice is needed. Years ago, my son, who is now an adult, was beaten up by 6 kids coming home from school one day. He had bruises all over his back. And he's an adult now, 23. And he was a 4th grader, and 3 of the kids who beat him up were 4th, the other 3 were 6th graders. I called the police and turned it in, and this is several years ago. And back then, for the majority of it was beating up. It was bruises left, you know, alley fights, not shootings and stabbings like we're seeing today. But back then, I was even told by some of the police people, not to allow the case to be dropped, because back then some of these kids had over 40 rap sheets in fourth grade. That says something for what we're not doing. You know, for a fourth grader, you have so many, and this is years ago, and nowadays it's even higher than that, I'm sure. And I don't really know how to end this except to hand out these papers. I'm not a big speaker, I'm not, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma, I'm an EA. I work in church sometimes, volunteering, helping with kids. I help with some of the events around town. I'm just a normal person. But even I see that there's some problems. And like I said, if we don't do something, we can turn those fingers around and point them back at ourselves, because it's our fault. So I don't know what we can do, because, you know, Boys and Girls Club, I don't know how, why it all stopped exactly. I don't know why DARE isn't there anymore. Whatever other programs, but we need to do something for our kids and our grandkids and the future and the now. You know, and if you were to go out into the public and talk to some of these families, there are people like you and me who just are trying to raise family. Some of them. Others of them, yeah, they've been in gangs forever, but they haven't known a difference, and they need to be shown it. They need us to reach out. So I'm going to pass this out, and again, I thank you. And if you haven't had a chance to get out and talk to some people, go talk to the Cervantes family and some of the others. I'm sure they would more than welcome people coming and finding out their thoughts. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to say just one thing, Heidi. I agree with what you say, and one thing about when you say, you know, there's three fingers pointing back at you, all the citizens of Lavelle need to be involved too. They need to report things that they see that are, you know, if they even think they're suspicious or something. I mean, it might have fled the call center or something, but, you know, I believe our community also needs to get involved. They don't have to leave a name, do they, if they report something? You know, they can just call and say, mm-hmm. Hey, I see, you know, such and such going on.
100% I agree with you. I do feel that we need to publicize more, that we want that brought forward, because a lot of people don't show up to me. I honestly was hoping this would be packed. Uh-huh. And I would like to, when I hand this to you, I would like to ask that maybe in a couple weeks we can revisit after you've had a chance to review this, and maybe by then some notice with the papers and whatnot, we can get it out there so that more people will come and show the support for our kids, you know. We have so many churches in Othello. We have people with so many different means that can volunteer, open places up, I mean, all kinds of outlets, and I don't have the answers for all of them, but I just feel like, I just feel like we really need to do something. I would be happy to help research all this. I'm a mom, like I said, I don't know anything about the law or other than stealing's wrong and stuff. but I would like to revisit this again, and if anyone else would like to help volunteer, bring their time, or has any information that we can pull together. And like I said, you know, it's not just Othello. We need to get with some of the other cities around us, because it's our kids fighting their kids, fighting their kids. And it's, I mean, we can't just put a bubble around our town and say, okay, we're okay now. You know, it really is community widespread. You know, it reaches far beyond here. And so, anyway, I'll hand this out, and I thank you again.
like she's passing this out, this ordinance is in no way meant to take care of all of our problems. This is just a small little tool that we could give our police department to help. Researched a lot of different ordinances throughout the state. The Yakima Valley a couple years ago was hit really hard with a lot of crime violence. The communities there gathered together and each community started to pass ordinances over there. This ordinance that I got tonight is kind of modeled after Union Gap in Yakima. Like I said, I wish you'd read it over the next couple of weeks. I'll have the attorney review it and hopefully we can bring it back in a couple of weeks. But this is just one small part of the picture. This is to help with suppression. We have prevention to work with too. And this is where the community needs to come together and work with that. That's going to be the community effort too, community policing. This council used to fund different programs, Boys and Girls Club, but because of budget shortfalls with Moses Lake, they unfortunately had to pull their local chapter here. We used to do a summer parks and rec program, a summer program for the youth. We had DARE, but there's budget cuts. We do have a school resource officer. I don't know all the activities he does in school, but maybe this is something that we need to work on. I was in Eamon's office one day and we got to talk to the police chief and the city manager of Prosser. They work heavily on prevention and they feel it works very well. They sent over a lot of really good information that will give us a good start on some stuff that we possibly need to look at. I would like to eventually see a private group or a church group possibly contract with the city for after school programs again to work with these kids. We need to give these kids a place, a safe place, and a place they could come and not worry about the pressures. It's so much different. I grew up in the high school system, graduated in 1980. So much has changed with our students from back then to now. It's just the peer pressure that's put on them. The family lifestyles have changed and how these kids are being raised. They are always looking for a home because a lot of them have both parents have to work to make an income anymore. So they have no place to go. And it's something I really want this council to look at, to possibly look at some programs to fund that we could help in prevention and get involved with our youth again to see. Some of these programs were stopped about 4 years ago, and I think we are starting to see the results of that now. And I think the money spent on those would be far better than our police department and have to do the suppression or, and I want to compliment the police department on their quick arrest for the last shootings. I believe they are doing a very good job. And I compliment them for that. You've made a couple of arrests that were related to these shootings, but there's more out there. And like I said, the ordinance is just a beginning. It's just a tool that they could use to help them. Like I say, it comes back to the community, it comes back to us. And what really makes it tough is just a few days before the 17-year-old was killed, I was in Eamon's office, and we were talking about this, our problems. And if we're aware of problems and we don't take care of them, it makes us responsible. And it was hard to hear about this 17-year-old a couple days later.
Council members?
I would like to say something. During this discussion, four people got up and said we need to be proactive. And just because I'm sitting behind a nameplate up here doesn't make me a genius. I don't know what to do. The only thing I know that got me through life was sports. And we have swimming pools, basketball courts, tennis courts, baseball fields, lighted baseball fields. We're putting money aside for a skateboard park. So I would challenge those people that said we need to be proactive to get it in writing what you want council to do. Because I don't know the answer. So obviously, gang activity is not good. A bullet going through the air doesn't care what color I am or what color my family is, it causes harm. Whether they're shooting at each other or I get astray, I'm still hurt or dead. So obviously I'm interested in curtailing this. But the old saying, all it takes for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. So you guys want to be proactive, put the together, meet at McDonald's, whatever, put it in writing what council needs to do, and we'll certainly take a look at it. I'm not sure it's a funding issue. I don't know that it's a police issue. I don't have all the answers. But I try, as a council member, and I keep going back to sports because that's what I know, to keep improvements on our sporting facilities and what these kids can do. There's 500 plus kids that are involved in Babe Ruth baseball and probably 100 volunteers that manage that program. So to me, that's something for kids to do after school. The swimming pool, that's something for them to do during the summer. That's all good, supervised, safe fun. So if we need to do something else, put a proposal in writing, bring it to us. We're certainly interested in the thoughts of the citizens.
What we need not to forget is that this was based many years ago. And the turning point that's come now is the foundation gang members that were here now have children. They were never shown any different. You know, it starts in the home. It really does. Everything starts in the home. You know, we look at it, you guys kind of mentioned school. I can actually give you a little insight on the school pool's view, but I'm just giving it for information. Is they are proactive. They work heavily with the associations, whether it be the juveniles, so the sheriff. They utilize every single piece they can to inform themselves, to understand what's going on. Do they pick up their phone as fast as they can and find out what juvenile's doing and what they know about each kid, individual? Yes. Do we need to be proactive in that manner? Yes. But it doesn't stop there. What happens is that it's the old theory about the camel. You can take them to water, but you can't make them drink. What we need to do is really hit it in the mouth and stay on top of it, just like I said. Hey, great ideas. All of them are great ideas. As long as you can keep them busy, something good's going to come from it. But at the end of the day, we know predominantly the families that have raised these kids that are now being managed, that are shooting. from the get-go, I don't know if I've been fortunate or unfortunate to have grown up and seen both sides of it now. To be the kid that was getting whooped by these kids and now see their kids out shooting other kids. It's visual for me. Have I had friends that died? Yes. Do I have friends that grew up gangbangers and they still are gangbangers? Yes. And it's the same guy I knew, it's just, he went this way and I went that way. And it's sad, but it's the people that you know, and you're right, it's the people you walk by every day. But I'll reiterate, you've got to go back to the home. It all starts back in the home. You know, I can pinpoint and tell Roy and the other guy that are in here, we all know where it comes from. It's a small town, like your dad said. This town is way too small to not recognize the problem that is in front of us. If you don't see it, it's because you don't open your eyes. So we've got to be proactive.
Unfortunately, the chief isn't in here right at the moment. He has been very proactive. I've been meeting with him for 3 or 4 weeks now. And the community was proactive on these shootings, which is really nice. The reason they are arrested, these people, is because of citizens. And that was nice to see. And Heidi, you're right. It takes the whole community to raise a child. We hear that at our church, at Nazarene Church, where I happen to go. So, and so this is a great start. You know what you guys have done. The council will take a look at this. Of course, our lawyer will have to also. And I wanted to give Steve, did you want to respond a little bit, Steve, or not really?
No, I think I'm fine.
Okay.
We'll wait until after we review the ordinance with the attorney.
Did you want to say a few?
Yeah.
Did you want to say a few things about what the police department is doing, or not really, tonight?
What would you like to know?
Well, the citizens are sitting here, so.
What would you like to know?
The DARE program was a program that was federally funded, and it dealt with mostly drugs, trying to keep kids off of smoking marijuana before they were 18. Currently, the program that is out there that's federally funded is the GRADE program. That's gang resistance and education training. We sent our school resource officer to that training. It was a federally paid 2-week training in Portland. And he's ready to start that program. I think it starts at the 7th grade level. This year wasn't able to, he started it. He had, was out for a personal reason for a while, and with the school construction, it's been very difficult to get that scheduled. So there was some issues about the actual being able to do it for the 7th grade because of the construction.
Do we have anything for you?
For the younger kids, the school district has a program where parents are able to bring their preschoolers, pre-kindergarten age kids in. That's been a huge success. And the thought is that if we treat or teach parents how to promote education with really young children, then that gives them a better start once they hit kindergarten. You probably know more about that program than I do. I don't remember what it's called. Do you? No, it's not Head Start. It has to do with kindergarten. But anyway, so they're bringing parents in. They're teaching parent skills. They're teaching how parents can relate to young children, how to educate. And what they're finding is that when the child goes into kindergarten, then the child is much more adjusted, well-adjusted, and ready to start that kindergarten process, which is a whole day curriculum right now, I believe.
I can't say that the school is doing exceptional job, giving them and their parents
right
before they get into school.
Yeah,
they mandate that a parent or parents.
It's been a very, very, very successful program. The school district's been doing a good job. And I think that they started out, they were hoping to get like 40 sets for the pilot program. And then it just kind of took off, and now they're like 120 enrollment. So it's a big deal. So probably, you know, one of the things a couple of months ago, before any of the recent incidents, Barb Anderson, who's already left, she heads up the Adams County Community Network, which I belong to, and she called me up and she said, has the police department ever done an assessment on the actual gang problem so that we know and understand how systemic or in-depth it is? And I said, no. Not that I know of, but I'd be willing to put in the time to research my data and find out what I could find out. The reason is because a community has to do an assessment and find out really what their problem is and where the problem lies, because there's three phases to all of this. There's prevention, which starts very early. There's intervention, which happens sometimes at the police level, a lot of times with Bertie's old crew in probation,
those things, and then there's suppression. And the police are, we're the suppressors. We don't do much intervention, and we do prevention what we can as we go, but we're not prevention specialists. So the assessment we started looking into is a precursor to any federal funds for any kind of grants, whether it be in suppression, intervention, or prevention, based on what the assessment finds that the community needs or lacks. So Barbara and I started talking a couple months ago to go ahead and do that assessment. So I've actually undertaken that. I'm spearheading that effort to do this assessment. And so we hope to start it. The first phase is assembling a steering committee, which will be the school district, the police department, medical, leaders, SMPLOC, community leaders, faith-based leaders, will become to the table to discuss the issue, and then we'll start putting the data together. We'll be relying heavily on the school district because a lot of this is survey-based in the schools so that we can actually get a good gauge from the kids as to how much gang activity or how many gang people are actually within the school district. Because the school has, right now it's very difficult to tell because the school has a very zero-tolerant policy with regard to gang dress, gang signs, and you can't even give the peace sign, and they get, you get a referral or a deferral, whatever they call it. You go to the principal's office. So there's a lot of good things that are already in place. Now it's just educating everybody and bringing everybody together. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. So the assessment has begun. And then that will give us the foundation for any kind of grants that we need, whether it be in prevention, intervention, or suppression, whatever we lack. So.
Could you address the statements that were given by you and the juvenile administrator, why there's such a difference of opinion as to the victim and his affiliation and or for?
Legally, in order to tag anybody as an official gang member, there has to be certain criteria that has to be met. Police department maintains that guideline, and we don't call people gang members unless we have the information and the data and the backup to back that statement up. Because that name goes into an intelligence file, and the city could be sued for people who improperly go into the gang intelligence file. Julio was unbeknownst to us until that day. He didn't have a big criminal history or anything else, but he was more familiar with the juvenile officers, and obviously he spoke to them and talked to them more openly than he did with us because we didn't have occasion to arrest him, I guess. So that's pretty much it. A lot of it is perspective and what was happening and what was happening.
Right, and I think that's what we need here.
Sure. Right. But that was a very good question because I asked the same thing when I read that in the newspaper. Yes.
What qualifies somebody to be a gang member? I mean, do they have to have a criminal background? I mean, what is it exactly that you tag them as gang members?
Well,
isn't a gang a group of people that have the same mental whatever? And that's what they're doing. They all get bandanas, all meet people up in their pockets. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different criteria that come into play, and you have to meet those criteria under federal regulations before you can tag anybody as a true gang member. That is, do they admit it? Do they have tattoos? How many times have the police found them in the company of other gang members? Do they wear colors? Those kinds of things. Do they have criminal history? Is that associated with other known gang members? So there's a lot of things that we have to look at, and it is federally regulated, so we have to be very careful about how we label people.
When you say they have to have tattoos, for God's sake,
they don't have to have tattoos.
Specific tattoos, are they specific?
Specific gang tattoos.
I've got a couple of women friends that are going to jail for sure.
Well, we can't arrest anybody for having tattoos. So.
Let's be specific here.
But yeah, the tattoos would be gang tattoos.
Specific.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Chief.
Thank you.
Appreciate you addressing the audience a little bit.
The specific answers in this ordinance, it's spelled out, as Jim just pointed out to me.
Oh, okay.
All the criteria is in here that the chief was alluding to.
Okay, good. Dan, did you have a comment?
I would agree with Councilmember Spohr that sports is going to be a big difference, but whatever you do, it has to start early. I think Ken probably remembers when he was in the sixth grade, we had a smoking unit. We had a little machine that smoked a cigarette, so you got to put a little filter in it, and saw how dark it was, and they had slices of stuff. Derek came along about the time when you were, I think we did DARE program when you were in school. DARE program's kind of gone away, and but it the early intervention is what's, you know, the school district starting at the kindergarten, then we started to be talking about third grade, no later than third grade. I don't think, because these kids are getting information off the street and stuff like that. And if you don't have someplace for them to go, then they're going to be out on the street walking around. Charles brought up the you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink, but he left the second part out of it. If you know the horse's parents, you know why. So, you know, it's just kind of that sort of thing. And the comment about gang members and they have kids, there they are right there. And but the earlier you start, the more successful you're going to be. But it's going to take complete community agreement and help. If you have to have a community center of some kind, if we get behind it and say, okay, we're going to have one of those, you know, if you have enough people around, why, that's what's going to happen.
The city of
bringing up that thing to the city, then we see what we can do about it.
The city of Prosser has an interlocal agreement with the school district. They pay them almost $50,000 a year. They have a couple gentlemen working on it. And they feel that is very productive for them. and I think that's what we need to look at, maybe increasing along with the school district, working with the school district more. And that might be an area to hit these younger kids and stuff too.
I happened to get lucky and walk in when we were talking to the guy from Prosser, and I was impressed with what they were saying about how they're handling what goes on down there.
I'll tell you, if you work with the school district has zero tolerance. So that may be a good approach.
But still, I didn't confirm these numbers, but I was told that the class of 2010 that graduated 170 had freshman start that class at 230. So that 60 kids drop out, but to me, that those are just potential gang members. And that would be a source of information why a third of a class doesn't graduate.
Almost 20 of them graduated with the ALPS program.
Hmm.
So some did get back into the program, which is always a good choice for us. I mean, a good option.
I want to thank everybody for coming. This has really brought this to attention for the council. Like Mark Snyder had said, Councilman Snyder, it really takes a whole community. So I guess what we're going to have to do is look at what we can do to help gather the community, maybe. Start looking at how to do that, how to bring all the entities together, get the information together, things like that. So maybe that's something as a council will look into. Ken's been involved, take his lead, and see what we can do about gathering these entities together, and maybe what can we do to help affect the kids at a younger age, like we're hearing tonight and stuff. And we won't solve anything tonight. It's not an issue that we can vote on either. So, but it is important. We have been addressing it as a city, or as a government, I should say, city government. And we'll look into what we can do about getting all of us together and start talking again and have the citizens in also. But it also takes everybody here telling people, be there. We need to have that out there. We need you to say to the people, be there. This is important. How important is your community to you? That's what really is going to, that is what's going to change it. It won't be all the different entities. It'll be its citizens saying we're not going to put up with it. So we'll see what we can do about it. We'll have instruct Eamon to start looking into who's all involved in this and move forward, and we'll get something in the paper so people hear about it. Maybe there'll be some committees that come about, and we'd love to have some of you volunteer to get involved. You know, Eleanor's been involved in a lot of things. Maxine, did you have something?
Is it possible for you to call a town hall meeting?
Really?
We can do that.
Is it? Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess it is.
Well, you get a good idea of whether people care or not.
Well, we'll look into that. Ken was just telling me that the city of Warden's been doing it. Maybe we'll contact them and see how successful it's been.
Sure. If you can have it on neutral ground and have people come, because you're sure going to find out whether or not there's people in the community willing to step up if you have a town hall meeting. Task force are great, but they aren't the grassroots people. They're the professionals.
Yeah, they'll supply the information, though, to be given to the citizens. You know, that's what we come out of that with. So that'd be, let's start looking into that and see what steps we can go on. You know, if there's some of you that would like to be involved in that, please come to City Hall and let us know. We'd love to have you in. If Eleanor would like to become more involved in it, that's fine, or whoever. I should keep saying Eleanor's name, but but she's been involved in lots of things over the past, so, and probably still. Other than that, I think we'll move on to the next topic here, and we'll, you'll see some things in the paper coming up, and we'll try to attack it from that direction and see about what Warden's doing, maybe some of the other communities, and try to get something going here. So, and thank you again for coming. Okay, Jim Whitaker, city attorney.
The other lawyer did.
I brought my laptop, so you know I have one. And now, of course, it won't work. That's not really true. It works. Rather than go through the list of things that were on the agenda, I just want to kind of roll them all up in a ball and get to the end part, which is the important part, which is the possibility of a council email policy that you might want to consider adopting. And what this starts out with is a discussion, again, which you've seen before, about city organization. And I copied and pasted, or whatever you call it, cut and pasted it, from the other stuff, which I wanted to be consistent. But on the middle of the first page, I added in recall of Robinson. Now, that center of learning and commerce, Basin City, has contributed mightily to the legal precedents of the state of Washington. And I can't say that it was because they had a bad lawyer or anything, because I know the city attorney there, and he's a good lawyer. And this was really a very perplexing case. A new mayor was elected, and the new mayor pretty much determined that he was going to do what he was going to do, and the council had a way they'd been doing business, and they expected things to continue the way they'd been. And the new mayor pretty much just kind of said, I don't think so. So this precipitated fairly early in Mayor Robinson's term a recall, which was basically funded by council members. But they didn't sign the petition as the petitioners. They had a good friend of one of the council members sign the petition for recall. But the bottom line that comes out of in recall of Robinson is, before this case, it was an understanding in Washington, as I had put in these materials for 20 years, that the Washington legislature, by constitution, determines the relationship between the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary in cities. It is not constitutionally mandated like it is at the state level, where you have an executive who has the power to veto the legislature. I mean, state government can lock up. Fortunately, we don't have a lot of that here. We see more of it in California and some other places. But the government, state government in this state, can lock up. City government, by its very nature, by the way it was constructed by the state legislature, really can't lock up. Now, some cities that have written their own charters have built in a lockup system. Now, why they went and defeated what the legislature had given them, I'm not quite sure. But some of them with charters, particularly Seattle, actually does have a lockup system that can happen to them. But the thing I wanted to emphasize to you is between the two bars in the middle of the page is that in recall of Robinson has changed things in Washington. Limits of council restrictions on or interference with executive duties of the mayor has taken to a new level now by the Robinson case. It used to be that councils could give general directions to the mayor. In fact, councils could give fairly specific directions to mayor about what the council wanted carried out in the name of the city. Robinson case, the council wanted the mayor to go to a meeting and take a certain position. The mayor went to the meeting, attended it, and said, he didn't like that position. He's going to take a different position. Supreme Court said, that's fine. That's part of the mayor's job. Council authorized the mayor to sign a contract with the fire district for ambulance service. Mayor didn't sign the contract with the fire district for ambulance service. Mayor went into further negotiations with the fire district over ambulance service terms. Supreme Court said, that's fine. That's part of the mayor's job. He's just looking out for the city. Now, I don't know if in re recall of Robinson is going to become an anomaly on the waters of Washington judicial precedent. I don't know. I have to be careful because I have seen members of my profession publicly admonished by Supreme Court justices who don't like being criticized in any written document. But the bottom line is there are no municipal lawyers on the Supreme Court at this time, or people who have any particular experience with municipal law or understand municipal law. And I think the reaction was more of almost a political science reaction, not a legal reaction to the dispute between the council and the mayor in Basin City. I almost get the impression that because it happened in Basin City, it was like, well, it's just Basin City. Well, I'm sorry. Guess what? Basin City is a non-charter code city, just like you, just like Bellevue. So this decision applies to every other non-charter code city in the state of Washington, of which there's like 113. So the decision has wide impact. But mostly I put that in there to remind you. I added it to what was in the previous materials to make you aware of it. And then I reiterated what your council functions are. And on page 2, right above the OPMA references, I pointed out that the city council does not direct any city employees. Remember, we've talked about that before. City council members are not city employees. You are elected officials. There's a big difference there in what you are. As elected officials, you can request information from staff relative to the operation of the city so long as you're not interfering with what they're doing otherwise. You have that right to know how the city operates, to gather in a manner that doesn't interfere with ongoing present work, information about a department, how a project's going, that kind of thing. However, you cannot take direct control of any work. You don't have the power to stop any work. You don't have the power to interfere with what that does. If you think something's gone awry, you need to get a hold of the mayor, especially after in re recall of Robinson, you need to get a hold of the mayor and try to convince the mayor that something needs to be stopped, done, or changed, because the mayor is the only one who can give those kinds of directions. And after in re recall of Robinson, that's more clear than ever. Now, the next thing is, I put the next part under the OPMA, and it appears it's a little out of place. It actually is not. It's a continuation, and you'll recognize this, those of you who were here when we talked about the vignettes from WCIA's training that they were kind enough to share with us, and we talked about council do's and don'ts. This is one of those don'ts. This is the police officer who is by the side of the road and has the council come up and start giving him instructions on what to do, which ended up in the filing of a grievance, a court-ordered no-contact order, and then for good measure, a story in the newspaper just to help out the elected official. So the other part of it is that is not discussed really in Lou Lai's materials in the vignettes is that you're getting close to violating the OPMA, the Open Public Meetings Act, when you start to overstep your bounds and start to deal directly with a city employee in a management role. It can go sideways, because remember when we talked before about getting outside the scope of what you're supposed to do, it can have complications. And then I left in here the example I gave you last year out of the city of Kittitas, where we had the female public employee that the council member thought wasn't doing her job sufficiently, so he borrowed a van and put on a disguise and followed her around at work to the point that she went over to the sheriff's department and obtained a criminal no contact and stalking order, and the council member got to stand before the district court judge and be arraigned on stalking charges. Until we finally got that straightened out. And once the council person figured out they weren't supposed to go undercover and follow the employees around, scaring them like that, things went a lot better. But the OPMA, as I pointed out in the materials from before, is one of the first situations you're going to run into. And at the bottom of the page, we start talking about Wood versus the Battleground School District. And Wood versus Battleground is the situation where elected but not yet sworn in school board members start into negotiations and discussions with members of the school board about firing the superintendent and whether or not an action has been taken. And almost all of this action was done by phone tree, by phone call, by conference call, or by chained telephone calls. Not necessarily three or four people having a discussion together at any one time. One and two have a discussion, two and three have a discussion, three and four have a discussion. And the court held that the only thing that saved Battleground School District was they hadn't been sworn in yet, they weren't yet public officials, so they couldn't violate the Open Public Meetings Act yet. Now, a case that didn't go to the Court of Appeals is the Bothell case, which is a few years older, which involved a discussion about the location of a public housing project in Bothell. Contentious. A lot of people view those as property devaluators, as sources of crime, as sources of unwanted persons in their neighborhood. Those persons conducted their discussions by email. And this is the first case in Washington that we know of in which a judge actually ordered the seizure of every council member's personal computer when they would not turn them over and reveal the emails in which they had discussed potential city business. And all of this arose from a public records request from the Seattle Times newspaper. Please remember that the change in Washington in the public disclosure law 3 years ago, now coupled with Washington's Open Public Meetings Act, they lockstep together and they create great potential liability for elected bodies and groups who are not very careful about how these work. And at the top of the next page, we talk about leaking executive session material, and that is from Lou's materials, and it's the pre-defense contract review about the case of the termination of the public works director, and it's the old friend of the council member, and he goes and hears the discussion by the attorney and then promptly tells the public works director what the defense of the city is going to be to his case. Lou Lai's response was to deny insurance coverage to the member for violation of the terms of the agreement of insurance. So always please keep that in mind, that when claims or potential claims come up and people want to start talking, it's best to not talk to them about those things or even put yourself in a position where they can claim that you talked to them about those things, because that's an excuse for the insurer to say, well, you compromised my right to defend. I'm not going to defend you. You're going to defend on your own nickel. You're going to pay the claim on your own nickel. Below that, I remind the council of RCW 42-2100 once again. Whenever any duty is enjoined by law upon any public officer or other person holding any public trust or employment, their willful neglect to perform such duty, except when otherwise specifically provided for, shall be a misdemeanor. Since the law provides that you are not to disclose materials in an executive session because they are the property of the council as a whole, in your situation, they're the property of the governing body, disclosing those things without the consent of the council, without the matter having become a matter of public record or otherwise being excused, does potentially subject you to being charged with a crime, and that crime could result in a forfeiture of your office. It's just not a good idea. And the reason I put that in here specifically, because we're heading towards the email policy, is please remember that that leaking can happen not just in a discussion with somebody inadvertently allowing it to be overheard, but it can happen electronically. It can happen by email. I'm not smart enough. I don't understand text. I don't have that feature turned on my phone. I barely can answer it. But I suspect if you text confidential information, you have breached it. And if you tweet it, which I'm not quite sure what the difference is between tweeting and texting, but apparently there is one. So, and also there are new, smartphones. These devices that can apparently do most everything except to cook the eggs in the morning. Apparently they can turn on your coffee and wake you up and set up your appointments and chime and bing and call people and Skype and a bunch of other things. Then there's another example from Lou in there about the OPMIA violation, which is actually the story of Shoreline. He didn't tell you that. I had it at the bottom. And this is the council people that decide they're going to hire a new city manager. And some of them are newly elected. Now, the difference is, in this case, as you all know, being as council people, once the election is certified at the end of November, you are, unless you are disqualified by law, you are the new council person in that position. The swearing in or the hootenanny that you may do here for the public and to have your picture in the paper, and you all want to do that because you're elected folks, you know, you want to get elected again, your mom wants a copy, I mean, you know, everybody wants one of those. But remember, you're actually elected officials, which unlike the Battleground case, they had their discussion about getting rid of the superintendent right out the get-go. They apparently did not like this superintendent. They're going to get rid of him right out the get-go. Well, these people in Shoreline waited longer. They waited until it was 2 days before they were going to attend their first council meeting. They'd already signed their oaths of office. So they have a little get-together and decide, the four of them, not in a public meeting, in a guy's front room, that they're going to fire that city manager and they're going to get a new city manager and they're going in a new direction, by golly. They're going to change how Shoreline's viewed up there on 99. Well, as soon as they told the other council members, moments before the council meeting started, what was about to happen, damnedest thing. Those other three council members were kind of cranked about not having maybe been involved in the discussion or had a little heads up or maybe a little public debate about whether or not we should fire the city manager. And the city manager, of course, loved it because now the city manager had a contract and his contract's just been violated. So the city manager is going to sit back and go, well, either I get my job back or we're going to make a settlement here, which they have. And as of last year, last fall, it was $400,000 that Shoreline had paid out at that time. The other thing, as I noted at the very bottom of that between the two bars, Shoreline is a poster child for don't. Don't tweet, don't text, turn off all your electronic stuff before you bring it to the council meeting. Because by just having it on, Shoreline was challenged on an OPM violation that a person in the audience swore up and down they saw Charles text Mark Snyder that, by golly, this is how we're going to vote on this issue. Well, of course, Charles said, no, I didn't. I was checking the ball scores or something to that effect. Well, you now have a minority on the council who do not trust the majority on the council. And so they, the minority, in essence, promotes the people in the audience. So they end up bringing in this guy with a parabolic gizmotron. I heard a description of it. Had these antennas set up in the room. And they used artificial devices to find out if he actually could have texted. And were they using the right kind of service? And did they have the right kind of stuff turned on? And they concluded, no, they couldn't. But this all cost Shoreline like $40,000 to have this forensic investigation done to prove that they hadn't violated the OPMA. So the moral of the story, just turn that stuff off, leave it home, don't do it here, because it potentially runs into a lot of money. Next we get into the appearance of fairness. You all remember that? That's when you're doing a quasi-judicial thing. Please remember, don't get out of line. Remember Hayden versus Port Townsend. Don't step down from your chair, step back out here, and then step right back up and make a promotion for yourself or some other person for your project. If you're disqualified for some reason, leave the chamber until the matter is concluded and then return. Don't put yourself in the city. I mean, now especially, I mean, Hayden against Port Townsend was decided in the days of two open public meetings and was a little easier to fix in today's world of one open record hearing and then closed hearings thereafter. If you taint the one open record hearing, you're talking about some damages to a developer or a promoter or some other person who challenges. So please remember not to do that. Then at the end, we get into the real guts of this thing, which is that, remember, as of a year and a half ago now, we have the Preservation of Electronic Public Records, WAC, Chapter 434662, which has gone into effect. And this then follows on with definitions from 4256, the Public Records Act, and 4014, Preservation and Destruction of Public Records. Basically, the city is supposed to come up with a means to preserve all electronic communications related to city business for at least 6 years. Stop and think back 6 years, please, as I wrote in here originally when we did this. 6 years ago, how far along was texting 6 years ago? I don't remember 6 years ago very many people texting. It was a kind of a new deal. In fact, not too many phones did it 6 years ago. Well, now, they not only text, they'll send video, they'll send, I mean, if I see these advertisements correctly on television, they'll do dang near anything you want them to do. And they'll capture it, they'll send it, they'll trap it. Now, how is the city going to preserve that? So, if you're a council member, please don't be leading edge geek guy. Please just be regular, slow person with the technology, because by being leading edge geek, you create problems for us that we can't, well, to tell you how badly this has gotten, the state attorney general has issued model electronic disclosure of documents rules. One of those talks about you're supposed to reveal documents in their native format. What is the most common electronic document cities have? Email. And it has a native format. It's pretty simple, right? Correct? Okay. Question asked this spring at the city attorney's conference. We're still waiting for an answer. How do you redact an email? Because just remember, just because it was a city record, a public record, it may contain confidential information about a person who has nothing to do with the request or whose identity is not to be revealed during the request. Now, if we did it on paper, we just take a big black marker, and we just draw a line through it, and then we make a copy. We redacted it, right? But we're supposed to, under the Attorney General's rules, redact it electronically. Well, we ask the question, damnedest thing. Nobody seems to know of any means by which you can redact an electronic document, because being an electronic document, it always contains all the information. You can always go back to the metadata and find out everything you want to know. Hey, I didn't even know email had metadata. I thought metadata was something that went with documents, like Word documents and PDF documents, but it turns out it goes with every document. So, anyway, the bottom line is, please don't send emails to other council members about city business from your home or business computer. And the city here has taken a giant step forward by getting you laptops, getting you business computers for the city. They've avoided what we talked about before, about setting up an account, talking to Stan, having a way to control what goes on. Then, that said, Eamon, I believe you handed out to them the draft policy. You have a draft policy. I didn't write this policy. I'm not smart enough to write a policy like that. I got this policy from Renton. Now, Renton's is a little longer than this. I shortened it up. But this policy assumes, first of all, we have to make sure you all know that there exists a City of Othello City Hall staff internet and email policy already. There is already a set of protocols on how to handle electronic messages. This policy would simply supplement that. And the reason Renton went to a supplemental policy makes sense to me, because what it does is, you're the only folks that can violate the Open Public Meetings Act. You're the only persons who can make certain quasi-judicial decisions wrongly. Remember in the materials, there's the discussion of the people after the meeting going to go to wind down, and they're all sitting in the bar having a schnort and discussing what just happened at the land use hearing that they attended. If they haven't made a final decision, that's, first of all, you're getting a quorum there, you're having a meeting, you're having a non-open public meeting, and you're having a meeting to discuss public business. So a lot of things can go bad. And those very same things that can go bad by having a schnort in the bar after the council meeting to wind down can go just as bad, as we know from the Bothell case and from the Wood case, they can go just as bad electronically with email, Twitter, texting, and probably, I guess, voicemails. Although voicemails have been pretty much spared on all this kind of thing. We do have a little guidance on this from the courts. We had a King County public records request made of a secretary's computer relative to a series of emails related to a project being handled through their engineering department. The King County at first, I don't know, some of you may be aware, there's a lawyer in King County who makes his living by suing King County over public records failures. He's made hundreds of thousands of dollars in these, in attorney's fees, in suing King County. King County seems to be rather dilatory in responding to these requests. I'm not quite sure why. And he got them again. Because it turns out, the secretary had a computer, but you know, the new model came out. So they took the old one, and they gave it to somebody else. And they gave her a new one, and King County only looked on the new one. Well, King County, if it's a record in your possession, you got to produce it. So King County realizes they've still got the old computer and goes and gets it. And, whoo, look at these emails. King County takes the position. But we don't have to give them up because guess what? This employee violated our rules. She's been using this to send personal emails. And there's a ton of them. Court's answer? Well, King County, better get busy, hadn't you? Read all the emails. Decide which ones relate to county business and which ones are personal. Segregate them. The ones that relate to personal business aren't public records, because remember, what's the definition of a public record? It has to relate to the public's business. So all that ton of emails you got to sort through to find the ones that are really about this project. And then you find the ones that are really about the project and you got to turn them over. King County paid again. So I just encourage you to think about that. So that led to this policy. Now, the policy I just give to you as a pretty straightforward thing. It's consistent with some other policies that have been adopted by some other cities, primarily Bellevue and Tacoma. The other part, though, the part is that there's been a question asked by Debbie. And I don't know if Stan was helping her ask this question or not. But on page 1 at 4.5, deletion of emails. This policy written by Renton assumes that once an email has been reduced to a paper copy, electronic versions will be deleted to save disk space. And you are permitted to do that if you do not have the capacity to keep saving emails. Because even at home, I'm sure you're aware how much space on your computer starts to be consumed by emails, especially if you're lucky like me and somehow you've gotten on a list and every day there's a pharmacy that wants to sell me some stuff. There are some Russian women that want to date me. There are some people that want to sell me a chance to bail out some bonds that are being held in Aruba or someplace, and all I got to do is just put up a few thousand dollars and they'll forget being paid back. I can just keep the money that's going to fall into my account. Anyway, once I get through those hundred and some things I get most every day, there's only about four or five emails that really matter. But all of them take up space on the computer. So if there's anything that the council wants to think about, and you may want to talk to Stan or hear from Stan about what is your capacity in your system, because even though they're on your laptops, I'm sure your system's going to mirror them to here. Because being on your laptops doesn't help him comply with the Records Act. He's got to have them in a central location where he can sort them. Because remember now, we all have to have the ability to sort emails if somebody makes a request for all documents. And that can get really tricky, especially if people use nicknames, that kind of stuff. It gets a lot harder to find things. We've been doing some testing at Moses Lake, and it's pretty much made the IT guys nuts for a while. And they wouldn't talk to me. And I haven't gotten an upgrade to my computer. I still have the old kind. Big boxy one. It only works because Gavinsky hit it really hard along the side one day and it kind of came back into view. It's got a concave picture in it. But anyway, that's where I would leave you, is that you really need to think about having a policy. I think it's good to have a policy. That way everyone knows where you stand and you all know where you stand. And you all can get a copy of the existing City Hall staff policy which this would supplement. And it goes into some more detail about the preservation and maintenance and disclosure of documents. So, tried to keep that short. I'd answer any questions. She did. She kind of, basically that, her question is about 4.5, what to do with them.
Yeah.
And that's really one that I would defer to Stan about.
We'll work on that internally with staff. And this is just draft tonight as policy, as Jim said, just for familiarization tonight. We'll move forward, but we do need to put a policy in place.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to have it immediately, but I would certainly encourage it sooner as opposed to later.
So to make it easier, just pick up the phone and talk to somebody.
You know, it's the damnedest thing that oral conversation isn't recorded anywhere yet.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Whitaker.
Sir.
This, you might be totally innocent on this, but when you brought up policy and procedure, you put the thing down on the chair, and the appearance was you handed it to one press, and not
my... That's because I only had one copy.
Not my fellow Coug over there didn't get a copy.
Well, I figured she was closer to City Hall.
I went to WSU, too.
Really?
We'll get you a copy one more. Thank you. I didn't notice that.
Okay. Approval of the fireworks permit. Says Devin. Oops. Eamon.
I'll kind of lead into this. We're going to end the night with a bang, so to speak, with fireworks permit. You have a copy on your council desk of the Chief Liebachen's recommendation. He has a few conditions in there that you can take a look at. He's here to answer any questions, but we're asking that the City Council approve the fireworks permit for the Chamber of Commerce.
Questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the fireworks permit for the Chamber of Commerce? Is that what we need?
Right.
Okay.
I'll make the motion.
Yeah. Awesome. Have a second?
Second.
And Kaler? Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Unfinished business. That's pretty good.
Last week, we'll try this again. The last meeting, Mr. Didion was here, and I said I would sit down with him, talk to him on some alternatives. We have proposed a couple alternatives to him, but he's not willing to give. So I'm trying to get him to sell the truck. I don't see who'll be selling it.
I do have an update on that. Late this evening, Mr. DeLeon called me, former Mayor Shannon McKay, and trying to resolve this same issue a year ago and 2 years ago, had offered Rodney space out by his shop on Steel Road. And tonight, Mr. DeLeon decided to call Shannon and take him up on his offer and move his trucks out there.
Oh, that's neat. Good. Any other unfinished business? Mark?
We just finished it, so now it's unfinished, was the fireworks. And Eamon, if you'd make a note of this, there was some, I can't find it right now, about the safety zone till the, quote, lights come on, the ball field lights. Mm-hmm. Well, last year they were cleaning up and wanted those lights, and they're on a timer, and they went off like a quarter to 11. So if for the 4th, if the city crew could turn that timer back till midnight or something so they can still be on when they're picking up and clearing the area.
We'll work with Chief Liebachen on that.
One other thing, I had a worker. I was in Wenatchee all weekend, and I was actually with the state director for BPA, which is an organization that holds host tournaments. And so they're tentatively going to give us 2 dates next year for youth baseball tournaments, 9 through 14. So they will be hosting 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14s. And so to give you an idea, we were in Wenatchee playing this last week. Seven teams between the divisions. So, and that was just a obviously building a good organization, which is a good one. I've done a lot through the years with softball with them, and now they're really heavy into baseball. And they keep the cost lower, so they get more teams and more people to come through. But yeah, they've had some really good growth. So he's real interested. He wants to do a couple next year. He committed to doing at least two, so I got to give him some dates. So I'm going to look and see what we've got going. We've got sure. Different times. But it's something to look at. It's, we can grow from there. Right now, he hosts 6
in the last year. Great. Thanks, Charles. That's awesome. Any other unfinished business? New business? Mark?
Mr. Amon, could you check that mic there? I'm old, but I don't think I'm passing my hearing test still. But some of those public members were hard to hear, and I don't think that mic is projecting through the speaker system, or it's too low or something. So, all
right. We can do that?
If you could check on that and get that mic to work.
Chief?
In connection with that, there was a lot of people in the audience that were having a hard time hearing the council's comments. I don't think that the microphone was projecting out the speaker system.
Any other new business?
Could you hear me okay?
No.
Not a word. Okay, mayor's announcements. Othello Housing Authority has an open house this Thursday at 11:30. Lunch is provided. If you need directions, see Debbie or Amon. Safe Built's last day for inspection is tomorrow. And July 4th holiday means the City Hall will be closed on Monday, July 5th. Do you want to reschedule for Tuesday, July 6th, 2010? Will there be a quorum? How do we feel on that one?
Is that a workshop date or a mm-hmm. council meeting date?
Workshop. Want to reschedule for Tuesday? Okay, I guess we're rescheduling to Tuesday then.
The 6th. Thank you.
The next emergency management meeting is scheduled for June 30th at 9 at the Sheriff's Office on Highway 26. Councilman Kaler, that's you. Anybody else that wants to come? Next park committee meeting is scheduled June 23rd at noon at City Hall. In an effort to keep up with the school district, lunch will be provided. Councilmember Darrell, Garcia, and Snyder.
I was to see if you were listening.
Yeah, it was. Darrell, Garcia, and Snyder. So.
Pizza.
All right.
Obviously, I'm not thinking about
my meal. This meeting's canceled. Oh, wait, whatever. Not canceled, over.
Yeah. Adjourned.
Adjourned, there we go.
I want to be on the park committee if they're getting free food.
Nice job. We're talking about actually doing that.